Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to welcome you to this social media research networking seminar here at the Department of History and Ethnology, arranged by a multidisciplinary research group led by Professor Epp Lauk from the Department of Communication. My name is Jukka Jouhki, and I'm a research fellow here at the Department of History and Ethnology. But without further ado, let me introduce to you Professor Epp Lauk.
Tervetuloa tähän sosiaalisen median tutkimuksen verkostoitumisseminaariin. Tämän seminaarin idea syntyi erään viestintätieteen laitoksen pienen projektin yhteydessä, jonka päämääränä oli tutkia sosiaalista mediaa. Ajattelimme, että olisi hyvä tavata muitakin samasta aiheesta kiinnostuneita tutkijoita ja keskustella ideoista, projekteista ja ongelmista alan tutkimisessa. Kiitos kaikille, jotka olette tulleet paikalle esittelemään tutkimustanne ja keskustelemaan. Viestintätieteiden laitoksella sosiaalisen median tutkimusryhmä perustettiin 2 vuotta sitten. Humanistinen tietokunta myönsi pienen apurahan pienen projektin aloittamiseksi. Ryhmään kuuluvat yliopiston tutkijat Turo Uskali viestintätieteiden laitokselta, Jukka Jouhki historian ja etnologian laitokselta, Niina Niskala viestintätieteiden laitoksen jatko-opiskelija ja maisterin opiskelija historian ja etnologian laitokselta, Maija Penttinen. Maija täällä. Joo, ryhmä on tehnyt yhteistyötä Oxfordin internet-instituutin kanssa ja se yhteistyö jatkuu. Me olemme myös perustaneet toistaiseksi suljetun Facebook-ryhmän tälle tutkimusryhmälle. Ryhmä aloitti siis 2011 pienellä hankkeella, joka kartoitti suomalaisen Facebookin ad hoc-ryhmiä. Ja tämän vuoden alusta saatiin hankkeelle jatkorahoitusta niin, että nyt tutkimuksen keskipisteenä on Facebookissa syntyvä kommunikatiivinen valta ja sen yhteiskunnallinen merkitys. Tästä mä haluaisin jatkaa englanniksi, koska se on helpompi puhua niistä monimutkaisista asiasta sillä kielellä. The first study of our group was called the Fifi State Ad Hoc Ryhmät Suomen Facebookissa. The aim was to test some ideas of the Fifi state. This is the concept that assumes that millions of individuals who are on the internet form networks which enhance their communicative power to the extent that they are able to challenge other powerful institutions in the society, including the traditional media, which is known as the fourth estate. The hypothesis of this first study was that Facebook's ad hoc groups, we define these as networks of individuals emerging around a pivotal issue in a community, that these groups have some characteristics of the Fifi state. They aspire to influence what is going on in society through their communicative power. Communicating power that is obtained through networking. These groups aim at achieving some change in society or influencing on decisions of the politicians or other decision makers. During the autumn of 2011, We identified hundreds of such groups on the Facebook, and they fell actually into three basic categories. First, networked individuals versus local policymakers. Second, networked individuals versus local or hyperlocal news media. And the third, networked individuals versus organizations and companies. The results showed that the Finnish civil society and culture appear to encourage especially hyperlocal activity and hyperlocal social movements. Most often, Facebook was adopted as launching arena for discussion some important problems and as discussion forum and formulating shared missions. In addition, Facebook as a fifth estate forum was also utilized when traditional media did not respond to their role of providing public space for discussions and citizen participation. In Finnish society, Facebook has not proved to be a venue of where sizable social movements emerge. The results of the first study also indicate that certain opposition exists between the fifth estate, the new social media, and the fourth estate, the press. But there is also a clear two-way traffic going on and cooperation between networked individuals and journalists. We did not specifically study the influence of or the relationship between traditional media and Facebook, but we studied how Facebook's ad hoc groups are covered and presented in the mainstream press. One of the master's thesis was written about that, and it gave interesting results, which say that ad hoc groups become news only if they do something interesting, provoking, if their activities are usually covered. But as soon as they stop provoking interest or doing something exceptional, then also the media's interest disappears, even if the problem that they are dealing with is still there, if it still persists. Then our study also indicated somewhat different nature of Finnish Facebook, Facebook's ad hoc groups, than it has been described in research in the other countries and in research on social movements, especially if we think of Castell's works on mass public movements, societal movements. Finnish groups, Finnish Facebook groups operate always locally, and they are loosely organized. They seem not to have ambition of networking among each other or to connect with other groups. And this raises another question, which is in the focus of our current project, about the ways how they use their potential communicative power and about the ways how they operate or what is the life cycle of these ad hoc groups. So our current project is called Testing the Communicative Power of Facebook Ad Hoc Groups. The latest research by Castells and others on networked-based movements describes how these movements emerge, how they communicate and operate, and what are the consequences. And the previous research also discusses the effects of the communicative power of networked citizens. But they do not reveal really what is the anatomy of this power. Most often, Facebook's ad hoc groups are seen as seeds or embryos of social movements, of larger social movements. which they most often prove to be in societies in turmoil. But in stable democracies like Finland, they may use their communicative power in different ways and for different purposes. In our research, we ask how the groups of networked citizens gain this communicative power, how they organize their communicative power in the context of Finnish stable and stable welfare society. And also what happens to these groups during their life cycle. We have defined three basic research questions. First, in which ways the Facebook and Facebook ad hoc groups gain their communicative power. And here research focuses on the anatomy of the groups, what are people's motives for joining these groups, what are the groups' ambitions and purposes, what are members' characteristics, and so on. The second, how the ad hoc groups perform and utilize their communicative power. And here we focus on the group members' perceptions of their group's communicative power, what are their participation patterns, what are the participation benefits, how they interact with other groups or among each other, and so on and so on. Then the third, what is the life cycle of Finnish Facebook ad hoc groups? Here research focuses on the changes in membership frequency of postings, how the information is spread among the group and about the group and things like that. Methodologically, this research is challenging, and we are going to use and combine various methods, qualitative and quantitative methods, and our ambition is to develop an application that will enable to will enable automatically search for these groups and pick up data about them, various data that then can be quantitatively processed. And I hope Nina can say a couple of words when I have finished about this this exciting tool. And then, of course, we utilize ethnographic method and interviews and things like that. This current research will serve basically as a pilot project, and we are, at least we aim at designing a broader research project and apply for funds. And we aim at involving people from other fields than ethnology and communication, but from perhaps sociology and social psychology and things like that. So everybody is invited to think together with us and express interest. And another dream connected to this seminar is to develop a more permanent network of people who are studying social media and change ideas and maybe create little projects together or even something bigger. And today I hope we can also discuss about this idea and see discuss about its name and modus operandi and things like that. So I give now floor to Nina.
And may I just add that each presentation has 20 minutes, and Maija here will show you a 5-minute paper when you have only 5 minutes left, and a 1-minute paper when you have to wrap up.
Okay, hello everyone. Very shortly about our quantitative research. As Ed mentioned, we are studying the communicative power and the life cycle of these ad hoc groups. And at the moment, we have started our Facebook research, and we know that there are limitations to this platform. So we have been trying to figure out what information we can get and what we cannot get from Facebook. And we are using this Facebook application, the application programming interface, to collect data to a database, and that we can later on data mine, and we can analyze and use as a search engine. We are focusing on groups' general and communicative evolution, their general activities and activity rates, communicative actions, everything from postings, events, shares, likes, external links, and also their dates, and we can figure out who has sent those messages. We are also concentrating on roles, how active and passive people are in these groups, and also on like general formation of networks among the groups, who are effective, who are communicating about the same subjects, and also the general effectiveness of communication that these groups can produce. And we cannot get certain information from Facebook, so detailed user information is not available to us, only first and last names of people in the groups. For example, people's friend lists or anything like that, or people who have joined the groups at a certain time or left the groups cannot be detected. But otherwise, the database, we can collect a lot of information. We can get endless amounts of data depending on our search commands. And for example, well, the study is just beginning, but I can show you. We get lines of information. This is, for example, about the activity rates. So we get postings. We could use this for postings, but this is, for example, from activities. So who has done something, some activity, in some number of days. And there are dates and everything. And this kind of data we can get from everything. So this is an example, just a preliminary example of posts. And we have gathered the similar kind of data. And then we can see that somebody has posted an event or a posting or something. And that would be the green line. And then somebody has commented on that particular event, and that would be the yellow line. And you can see how it transforms. This is the Tahdon 2013 campaign from start to the day we stopped collecting this. So we can get these evolutions from there. And now we just have to figure out what information we want to get. All the data is in the database from our pre-selected groups, which are about 20 groups, ad hoc groups, in Facebook.
Excuse me, are you free to choose the people who you want to study, or is it like your local friends?
No, everyone in the group.
Everyone in the who has joined this
group. Yeah, because these are open groups and open information, so we can get data from everyone who is in the group, but not details of their personal data, but first name and last name.
So pick any open group in Facebook.
Yes. Right. Every open and public data is available to us at the moment. So, yeah, we can do and then use certain tactics and statistics to create information from this. So this is very shortly. We're going to continue our research. And now the software is working. So we're going to continue and try to get great results and we're going to start analyzing it soon, and then we can give you also some results later on when we start networking and producing websites and everything. So this is from us. You can ask me later for more questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Nina Niskala, doctoral students from the Department of Communication. And next, I would like to introduce to you and welcome the Social Media Analysis Group, SOMEA, from the Department of Computer Science and Information Systems. And Professor Jari Veijalainen, I presume.
Just get this connected. Is this the right?
Tämä kyllä menee tänne, että pitäisikö se valittaa tähän sitten. Olisiko se niin, että se ainakaan automaattisesti se lähdet tähän.
Vai mukaanko siellä ohjausta, jota ei ole mistä?
Jaa. Mulla on yksi kaapelin päin. Tuolla on aika monta kaapelit. Testataanpas. Kokeillaan tätä. No nyt, okei. Laitetaan tästä tämä klappi. Taskuun vai pidätkö kädessä?
Vaikka tuohon sen sitten.
Okay, welcome to this presentation. So this is Jorma Kyppe is not talking, but Alexander Semenov will talk the rest of the talk. So this is the contents I'm going to talk, or we are going to talk, and this is the main activities. So we have been doing a little bit more than what the previous people had been doing. There are some master theses that are now ready. For example, this virtual police and youth, that's ready. And there's one master thesis that has been done from inside usage of social media in one company in this area. So our heavy point is, because we come from computer science, is to develop tools. And I'm going to present some ideas of this tool that we have developed. So it's along the similar lines as the previous talk, but I think it's a little bit more sophisticated. So the concepts we use in this social media analysis are these kind of things. What is social media? From our field, this is the definition very much used in Kaplan Henlein 2010. It's referenced over 1,400 times. And virtual community was introduced about 20 years ago by Howard Treingold, and since then it has been used quite a lot in this computer science information systems field. And we define this online social network as digital representation of the virtual community on a social media site, adhering to the site ontology. This is our concept, that contains a virtual identity for each user, records the relationship, user-generated contents, and the structure and relationships. And this is what we want to find from the network, not only the structures, but also this contents, whatever multimedia contents is there, videos and so on. You had messages, I think, and likes and these kind of things. This is, of course, one part of the contents. Then we have to be specific about the data that we can access. You mentioned already public data. I think we have like quite similar concept. But there's also semi-public and private data that we can address. So semi-public data is such that you have to usually authenticate to get access. So it's not freely available in the web. But you have to authenticate yourself. And private data is then such that only the owner can access it, and maybe he or she releases or it releases it to some other people in the web through the web interface.
What is that,
Live Journal, sorry that I didn't open it here. Okay, what we have been doing is this kind of rather heavy software that tries to address all possible social media sites. And we gather data, and we do it in time sequence, longitudinal data, so that we can go years back what happened there. I think you had the same problem, that you want to see how the group developed. So we have to take snapshots of the data on the site and then put it into database, and then we see how the group or whatever we follow developed. And then in order to really make more general software, we need ontologies to describe the data that we want to gather. And this is the mechanism of what we are, have been doing, so that we describe through ontologies the sites and also the data that we want to gather. And then we also developed a third three-level modeling framework that is actually implicitly or explicitly in all modeling endeavors in this field if we want to do really more general purpose software. And we have prototype that is running on a big machine. There are 16 processors and terabytes of disk data. And I think we have some terabytes of data collected.
In terabytes.
So this is the architecture of the system. So we have crawler that accesses the sites, and then we have repository where we store the data, and then we have analyzer that analyzes the data. The analyzer part is not yet fully developed, but these other parts are quite functional. And Semenov, Alexander will next week defend his thesis in this, so everybody's welcome to listen to the thesis defense. Okay, so here are some principles how we did that software. So it's what, 10,000 lines of code?
About that.
So that's the size of the software measured in lines of code. Okay, here are the requirements, what are general for this kind of system. I skip this because this is perhaps not so interesting to you. What is perhaps worth mentioning is that we really have to also store the multimedia data and over time. And this is quite a challenge, so that we get snapshots of all the site's contents at different points of time. Then I mentioned the site ontologies, and you mentioned already the APIs. We also, of course, use APIs. There are two kinds of APIs. So one is pull API, in which this crawler sends all the time requests and requests a piece of information from the site. And then we have the streaming or push APIs, where the site sends as a stream the data to the crawler. And typically Twitter is like that. So when you ask it to send, so then you get a stream of data. We have collected quite a lot this data. And then we have also accessed this Tor network and such forums as Soiluskunta and Torlauta that are in Finnish, so we collected that data. And there's a paper accepted to a conference that will be held in Jyväskylä on that, the results. So you were using more this pull API
yes.
At Facebook. So yeah, okay. So this is the three-level modeling framework. So we have immediate social reality. Then it's this virtually modeled social reality at the social media sites, and then we have a graph model that is homogeneous that tries to capture all possible social media sites and their contents. And that is then finally the third level mapped to the repository into the database structures and this kind of things. So you have also been following this path to a certain extent. You had database there and then you had some access to the virtual sites. But probably you didn't have that graph formalism. So you have directly the database scheme there. And everybody who does this has the same problems, actually, to solve the technical problems. So but this is general framework, so then we have to map between the layers or levels and see how the mappings are implemented in the systems. Okay, so maybe Alexander can then tell what he has collected, what he has found in the web from the social media sites.
Hold it up, put it in your pocket. Okay, my name is Alexander Semyonov. I'm a doctoral student in the Department of Computer Science and Informational Systems, and I was doing my doctoral thesis on this topic, social media analytics. Yeah, and I was working for about 3 years on development of the software, and during that 3 years, we have collected quite a lot of data. So we started from collection of data from social media site LiveJournal, from social media site LiveJournal, and we collected about 9 million of profiles and friend relations from this website. Yeah, so we were interested in school shootings at that time. So idea is that school shooters are the people who kill other people in school, and before that they announce all their plans online. And we were interested in collection of the data about these people who explicitly put in their interests school shooters or other related keywords. And we collected this kind of graph. So you can see that there are many communities which are connected to each other, and at the same time they are interested in the same things. So we made a hypothesis that we might find some real school shooters from this data, and not only people who are interested in the school shooters. Yeah, and we found one real school shooter who made school shooting in Germany. He is connected to this network. So he's marked red in this graph. So you can see that among these people who are interested in mass murders and school shootings, it's possible to find some perpetrators of crimes. And that was initial idea, to show that among those communities there are some people who can do really bad things. Then we collected groups from popular Russian website VKontakte. It's right now called vk.com. So formerly it was called VKontakte.ru. There are over 200 million people in this website. And we were interested with other researchers from the University of Buffalo in the United States. We were interested in collection of the data about parliamentary election in Ukraine, which were held in October 2012. Yeah, so I didn't present this information, but that's just an example of what we had collected. Then we collected contents of hidden services, Torlauta and Soiloskunta from Tor network. And then we collected around 12 million tweets related to Boston marathon bombing, which took place in April, basically a month ago. And now I'll present you this information about hidden services from Tor and tweets related to Boston marathon. Yeah, Tor, it's the onion routing, is system for online anonymity. It was initially built by United States military, and initially it was free software and open network that would help to defend against network surveillance and that would threaten to personal freedom and privacy. So it's encrypted software, and basically it's not possible to track the person who is sending the data, and it's not possible to track the person who is reading the data. So initially it had quite good purposes, but after some time, because it's totally anonymous, some websites which are called hidden services started to appear in this network. So I can show you one example, prominent example. It's called Silk Road. So idea is that on this website they sell various controlled substances, and because it's anonymous, it's impossible to track the person who sell it and the person to buy it. At least if someone would do these things in the internet, website can be closed, or maybe it's possible to track the person and find him. But in the store, it's impossible because of this encryption. And so you can see that there are many things sold. For example, cocaine, we can see from there, I don't know whether it's real or not, but at least it's written that they sell their cocaine and some other drugs. And from the comments, it's possible to check that people really sell it, and so that it can be really purchased from there. That's the examples, what can happen in these anonymous hidden networks. Yeah, but we were primarily interested in Finnish networks, Torlauta and Soiloskunta. So it's kind of hate groups in Finland. So Torlauta is anonymous forum, and they do basically the same things as in this Silk Road, but in Finnish language. And now I will present you some results of analysis of Soiloskunta. It's this hidden service. So we collected it, that site ontology of Soiloskunta. Probably it's not so interesting to see the results. Yeah, that's kind of social media site, probably looks like a typical web forum. And that's the most popular topics in that forum for all the times we collected the entire forum. It was running for about 3 years, as far as I remember. And there were these topics. Etnista, Pudistusta Olusa, Valan Kumous, Huvin Voiti Valtiosa. And so you can read all the other topics. It mostly contained some hate speech and other related things. So, yeah, there were multimedia data, pictures, videos. So we collected the text only and some pictures because it was so. Most important things probably were the text from there. And so we could collect the pictures, but for pictures we would need special analysis methods, like picture analysis, so we currently don't have it. We can just do this, for example, popular topics analysis or some social media analysis, but we don't do picture analysis. But certainly, so in the beginning I saved pictures and then I stopped it because this downloading of pictures takes quite a lot of time because pictures are quite big. And for quick forum collection, probably it's better to omit the pictures. Entire forum, it was because this Tor network is quite slow because of this encryption, but in this case it took something like a few hours, two or three. Yeah, even more, because LiveJournal is quite heavy network. There are 9 million, even more than 9 million, 9 million of nodes, and it took quite a lot of time. It was more than 1 week, and more than 1 week, basically. Yeah, so it's written that first collection was done in November of 2012, not 2014, it's misprint. So there were 3,699 messages. And in 2 months, approximately, there are about 200 messages arrived. So it's not so much messages, but still, for this hate group forum, and it's difficult to get in there using the store. Uh-huh. There were quite many messages, relatively. For this kind of place. So that means that so many people are interested in this hate speech, like ethnic cleansing in Oulu, for example, was first popular topic. They are interested in with this kind of speed. Yeah, and between those collections, such topics appeared. So the Skunta police in Auksi, so they were hypothesizing that police is looking for them. I don't know why, I didn't read it. That was the topic. And then realizing how, unfortunately, the meaning of that I don't know, and some other topics. But basically, the idea is to show that even person who doesn't speak Finnish well, I understand it, but still, it's possible to find this kind of data from there. And then after this marathon bombing took place, we were interested in collecting the data from Twitter, the stream data about Boston bombing, and it was interesting for us. So right now we have the data, and we made some preliminary analysis, but not all the things yet. Maybe we'll publish paper a bit later. So bombing took place in April 15 in 1849 UTC time, and we started collection in approximately 1.5 hours. And I decided to end the collection in April 20th because there were not much data. I will show you time series data, and you will see that at first there were many messages, and then after something like 1 week, almost no people were tweeting about that. So total number of messages, I think we collected 12,660,000 messages. Yeah. 14 millions, basically. And there were quite many retweeted messages because in Twitter, so we figured out that many people were not posting original messages, but they were just retweeting other messages. And I can show you, I think it's here, mostly retweeted messages. So I found from all the data mostly retweeted messages, and mostly that's messages like pray for Boston. My thoughts go out to anyone affected in Boston, so people were supporting these people. So for example, first most popular tweet, pray for Boston, hashtag. It was retweeted 92,000 times. So people were supporting it quite heavily. And in addition to that, they were sending some original tweets. And that time series graph of this retweets. So you can see that bombing started Yeah, so we started collection when this the maximum amount of tweets took place. And yeah, I can show this number of messages per 15-minute windows. So you can see at first there were many messages related to Boston, and then I think it's 20th of April when this Tsarnaev Jahar was found as a perpetrator, people started to tweet about that, because we had, after that I started a second collection, and there was, I put Tsarnaev as a keyword, and there was quite heavy this kind of peak of tweets about Jahar Tsarnaev. Yeah, so I have only 1 minute, but I can quickly tell that we have collected his profile from Contact Network, because he was active in the Russian social media network, social media site, and he had 11 friends, and then all the people, basically after he was found, all the people removed him from his friends, and there were only a few people who, and there were some Muslim communities. He was basically subscribed to people who frequently cite some things about Islam. That's what we found. Yeah, that's his picture, and that's latest result. It's important that at first, before his profile became popular, so before media and police announced him in media, there were a few comments, something like 10. And after his profile was found by some news articles and these kind of things, a huge number of people began to send them various comments, and he had videos, he had some this postings there, and a huge number of people started to post their messages. For example, under his picture, profile picture, which was shown in previous slide, he had 32,000 of comments. So basically, the idea is that people started to see, to read all the things, and yeah, there were some videos, and people started to see all this information, and it was some kind of spread. Yeah, so that's it. Main conclusion is that it's possible to collect large amounts of data from social media sites. Yeah, and there are legal challenges, for example, IPR, because it's private data. So we collect only public data, which is allowed by law, but still some problems might appear. And the main topic is automatic analysis, and especially real-time analysis. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you very much, Social Media Analysis Group. Thank you. And next, I will ask people from the Department of Languages to present a presentation titled Investigating Multilingualism and Multisemioticity as Resources for this Identification in Social Media.
Tähän voi vaan ladata omalta tikulta varmaan sen.
Joo. Pistetään se vaikka tuohon. Ja pistätkö taskuun vai pitätkö kädessä vai?
Mä kädessä. Yleisössä siis on ei suomenkielisiä.
Joo. Kyllä, että jos sopii niin.
Kyllä. Ilman muuta. Liat on englanniksi.
Mä olen liveenä tuolla netissä, niin englanninkielisiä.
Joo. Hello everyone, my name is Samu Kytölä and I'm the sole presenter this time of a research group of five people, including myself and Saija Peuronen, who's sitting over there, and three other people who unfortunately couldn't make it. I'll talk about their contributions to the research group in a minute. We all come from the Department of Languages, this university, together we form an Academy of Finland research project called Language and Superdiversity, Disidentification / Identification in Social Media. We all come from a linguistics background, more or less. Our previous project, a center of excellence spanning 6 years, was about the uses of English in Finland and attitudes towards English in Finland. And social digital media was only one key domain in this project. There were about 15, 16 of us, and just a handful of us had anything to do with digital media. So more or less we all come from a sociolinguistics and linguistics background and are relatively new to the study of digital social media. I actually did my PhD on a related topic, but more about that later. And now, when moving into this new project, we are not researching English in Finland as much anymore, but rather the ways in which resources provided by languages, discourses, genres, modalities are employed by users of social media for all kinds of identity work. And we're especially interested in the relationship between this identity work, the social media, and diversity. And you might wonder why it's called super diversity here. It's because we're part of an international research consortium with seven main partners who all study or research super diversity from different angles, especially the relationship between language use and super diversity. Basically, the concept of super diversity just means the diversification of diversity. So there's no more one diversity which is sort of copable with, but the diversity is so diversified that we have to find new ways of describing it. And we're also interested in collaborative and participatory knowledge construction and cultural production in social media. The main aims of this project, four-year academic project, is to study how communication in social media involves the use of a range of resources provided by language, text, sound, still images, moving images, and all kinds of cultural discourses. And two keywords, two perspectives on this phenomena we have are entextualization and resemiotization. More about them a bit later. We aim to understand, at least a little bit more deeply than at the moment, how discourses in social media that are woven from multiple intertwined, multi-semiotic materials become and are and remain socially and culturally meaningful to the people involved with them. And we are using an ethnographic and multidimensional theoretical methodological approach. So even if everybody has a background in linguistics and sociolinguistics, we are getting to cover a bit of a new terrain for everybody. There was a good definition already by the previous speakers on social media. We are subscribing to a rather broad definition, so not only social networking sites since 2006 or so, but we regard all applications that allow the creation, exchange, and circulation of user-generated content as social media within this project. So even old school digital media such as discussion forums and such count. And I think our approach is a bit more sociocultural than technological in this sense. So we think that social media are just media for social interaction. Although we acknowledge that the recent developments in digital social media, let's call it the past 15 years or so, have substantially changed the way organizations, communities, and individuals communicate, also offline. Now, getting to the sociolinguistic side of it. Within the sociolinguistics framework, we think that social media is social media offer increasingly important and meaningful communicative and cultural niches for participatory prosumer cultures, which are constructed around shared activities again, those two keywords, of which more a bit later, and textualization and resemiotization. We see social media practices as translocal, very essentially, and transcultural, and we have discovered ways in which social media actors and social media sites engage with diversity and this new concept of superdiversity in different ways. And we also argue that processes of identification and disidentification are among the key issues that arise whenever you start to study sociocultural diversity in digital social media. Here's a diagram of the methodological choices we've made so far. So most of us come from the study of multilingualism. Heteroglossia basically means the same from a slightly different angle. Stylistic diversity of human communication. Quite a few of us have backgrounds in discourse studies and also cultural studies, one of the main areas in our department, especially the subject of English. But linguistic ethnography is something where we've only recently begun to integrate in our work, particularly Saija, who's sitting over there. And as I told you in the beginning, this is new to some of us, and while others have a slightly longer background in the study of computer-mediated discourse in the first place. And this is more or less new to us. So this is something we're trying to integrate in the framework, the study of multisemioticity, beginning to understand language as part of a multimodal, multisemiotic constellation better than we used to. This is also something relatively new to linguistics at large. So it's only begun to gain ground, say, in the first decade of this new millennium, about 10 years ago or so. Now, the two concepts I wanted to talk about here, resemiotization and indextualization. Resemiotization comes from the study of visuals, the study of videos, images, and such. By resemiotization, we refer to the unfolding and rearticulation of meaning across modes and modalities, and also from groups of people to others. We have adapted these definitions from Rick Idema, from the Sydney School of Linguistic and Visual Grammar. And the framework of resemiotization emphasizes the need for socio-historical exploration and understanding of the complexity of the processes which constitute and surround meaning makings. So from the point of view of sociolinguistics, this means stepping outside the immediate context, stepping to trace its history, its trajectories, and also beyond it in the future. It adds longitudinal, diachronic aspect to a synchronic study of language use. And a very similar concept is entextualization, where resemiotization comes more from the study of images and video. Entextualization comes more from linguistic anthropology. Basically, it means the same thing, that earlier historically situated pieces of discourse are lifted out of their earlier contexts and transmitted, mediated, onwards, so that people quote them, echo them, insert them into new discourses. And these definitions we take from Bauman and Briggs and Blommaert, the linguistic anthropologists. Basically, the difference is not very big. One emphasizes the semiotic aspect, and the other emphasizes the textual aspect. But we're trying to use both at the moment in our forthcoming article, in our book in progress. And we think that these are really underused, really peripheral concepts in linguistics and even sociolinguistics so far. And we think that within the study of language, these concepts would deserve much more attention. And we argue that they are useful concepts because in social media, circulation and appropriation of discourses is multiplied, accelerated, and highlighted. Everything happens fast, everything is recycled, everything is acquiring new meanings in a different new context. And we also argue that these processes provide resources for grassroots social media users for meaning-making, sociality, and shared cultural experience. And this was a heavy bit of theory. Now let me show you five quick examples on of the research topics we're working on at the moment. So as you can see, we are a group of one senior scholar and four younger scholars at the moment. My own PhD dissertation was about the multilingual language use in online football discourse. And now I'm interested in taking some of that stuff a bit further and in a bit more multi-semiotic direction. One example I've been studying a few years ago and again recently is, can you see it, the picture? It's a bit unclear. It's absolutely clear here on my screen, but here it's relatively unclear. It's absolutely crystal clear here. Okay, so don't blame me for this. Okay, the case started from a tattoo on a Finnish celebrity's skin, more precisely belly, and the tattoo was allegedly supposed to read "Where there's a will, there's a road," the American or general English idiom. You know, if you want to do something very hard, you will achieve it, or something like that. But something went wrong in the process, and the published pictures of the tattoo seemed to read "there where," without an H, is "will" or possibly "mill." If you can see the W, it's very close to M actually. There's a road rather than a way. And this, of course, caught the attention of English-savvy Finnish people. This was originally published in a gossip magazine, I believe, and immediately started to circulate in the Finnish social media of the time, which happened to be pre-Facebook and pre-Twitter, in other words, web forums and weblogs, mostly. Or at least web forums and weblogs are the ones you can still trace after a few years. And relatively quickly, in the football forums I researched, and also other Finland-based forums, a kind of a bad English and will slash mill way road discourse emerged, mocking the celebrity and mocking the whole socio-cultural idea of celebrities having tattoos, possibly in English, possibly to be published in a magazine or on the web, and so on. And just one example of resemiotization and entextualization, which I came across in one of the football forums I researched at the time, was turning the word "will" into "mill," and of course the connection between a windmill and a road is obvious. There's a road leading past the mill. And these kinds of pictures circulated not only in the Finnish blogosphere and forum sphere, but also across continents, if you can speak about the internet like that. And one of the image manipulations was actually manipulating the belly tattoo more from a kind of a cross more towards a windmill and a road leading past it. This is funny, but it's also very cruel in a way. And examples I referred to in passing in my PhD work include the circulation and popularization of the phrase "there where is mill, there's a road" in two football forums called Footis Forum and Footis Forum 2. And there were this interesting for us sociolinguists is that there were a lot of different slight variations of the topic, which acquired different meanings, different social meanings in the groups. And we're only beginning to try to model this with the help of diagrams, but this is a very rough diagram for a start about how, obviously a two-dimensional diagram doesn't really capture it all, but just for the sake of this presentation, a simplified diagram of how this can be modeled. Sirpa Leppänen, our principal investigator, is currently working, among many other things, on Buffalax videos, which are a genre of video where an excerpt in a funny, unintelligible language, or unintelligible for most, is getting new subtitles in one's native or proficient language. For instance, an Indian Bollywood film gets new subtitles in Finnish, and the kind of cultural and sociocultural references that can happen as a result and in the process of making the new subtitles. So the Buffalax videos are a whole new genre of videos, and most Finns know one case best, the case of Pensseli Setä from a few years ago, the Syrian Kurd who sang a wedding song which acquired a new funny Finnish lyrics. Henna Jousmäki, who almost came here but had to cancel at the last minute, is working on a Christian metal online, including bands' websites and their interactive elements as far as social media are concerned, the band logos, band's videos, and all kinds of interactive discussions in YouTube and other sites about Christian metal lyrics and videos and logos. Saija Peuronen, who's here with me, is working on Christian snowboarders and extreme sports people in Finland, and has a strong offline focus alongside the online focus in her work. Saija has data from discussion forums, Facebook, online videos, and also offline interviews with the community members and recordings of their interaction. A truly fascinating topic for a research group like this. And finally, we have Elina Vestinen, who couldn't make it either. She's working on Finnish rap and hip-hop, including offline and online activities, lyrics, interviews, websites, blogs, YouTube, Facebook, and the Tumblr blog, at least one of them. And one example from her work we have used as an example is the rewritten Mamma Triva video by Finnish hip-hoppers. And this is as much as we have to say at the moment for the purpose of this seminar. So with the red color, I have tried to emphasize the most central things and burning issues we're working on at the moment. The online-offline question, participants' agency as prosumers, and differences and inequality issues which arise in almost every case and every example we research. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes. Samu Kytölä from Department of Languages. And next I would like to invite Aino Ruggiero from the Department of Communication with a presentation titled Social Media Monitoring for Crisis Communication: Process, Methods, and Trends in the Scientific Literature. And after this presentation, we will have a short coffee break outside.
Okay, hello everyone. My name is Aino Ruggiero and I come from the Department of Communication, the discipline of organizational communication and PR, where I work in a crisis communication related project and conduct also PhD studies on the same topic. The title of my presentation today is Social Media Monitoring for Crisis Communication, Process, Methods and Trends in the Scientific Literature. It's based on a paper that I wrote together with Professor Marita Voss from our discipline, and I also presented in a conference earlier this month. So I will start by explaining a little bit of the background of my of this study, namely the project in which I work, and then I present simply the study that we made, so a little bit of introduction, method results and conclusions. So our interest in social media comes from a project, CATO, it's called, which stands for CBR and Crisis Management, Architecture, Technologies and Operational Procedures. It's an EU-funded collaborative project with 25 partners in 14 countries. It tries to contribute to crisis communication and crisis management in the case of crisis of a more threatening kind, which have to do with crises that are due to terrorist attacks using CBR and materials, so chemical, biological, radiological or nuclear materials. And me and my colleagues, we work in a work package on crisis communication where we have two main tasks. One is constructing a scorecard as an audit for CBR and crisis communication, and second deals with social media, so building an analysis and strategy model for online crisis communication. And it's precisely this task that I will tell you a little bit more about, based on a small literature review study on social media monitoring methods that we made. The aim of this study was to clarify current knowledge on social media monitoring for the purpose of organizational communication and PR. And the ultimate purpose is to contribute to crisis communication in the case of emergencies and disasters, including incidents of terrorism, by explaining how this kind of fast developing social media discourse could be followed and analyzed. And the importance for this to gain insights in public perceptions and information needs of citizens that may be large in volume becomes evident in this type of serious crises, which are often unpredictable, unknown, and cause fear, and there's high levels of uncertainty and ambiguity involved, such as the anthrax crisis in 2001 following the 9/11 attacks. The method used was a literature review, systematic literature review study. We had as a research question, how are the methods for monitoring social media interaction of citizens described in the academic literature? We conducted a search in multiple electronic databases, limited to scientific articles in peer-reviewed journals, and with search terms social media monitoring, scanning or tracking or analytics, and communication or public relations. So monitoring for the purpose of communication in the context of communication and public relations. This was done in last October. And it yielded 102 hits, out of which 24 were selected in the final sample. So it was just a kind of small sample of articles that we could find that were relevant. And these were published in the years 2009 to 2012. And all of these articles were transported to Atlas TI and analyzed there based on data-driven thematic coding. In addition, some simple quantitative analyses were made. the study yielded insights in the scientific literature on five main topical areas: the concept of monitoring, the process of monitoring itself, monitoring methods, tools and solutions, and methodological issues, and then some trends that I will also explain. First, the concept. In the literature, social media monitoring is described as a research approach that covers both data collection and analysis. And some of the benefits that is much praised for include access to authentic data and continuous minute-by-minute real-time data collection, which perhaps you may you know also a lot about, more about. It may also provide novel information and pave the way for two-way communication, which is especially needed in crisis situations. And these methods for monitoring are also described as listening solutions that help researchers and organizations interpret and analyze what people are saying online, and described also as a 24/7 focus group that may provide insights for different, for instance, planning purposes. And the purposes why monitoring is conducted by organizations are really many. In addition to the function of it as analyzing the environment, which is more specifically our interest in the project, it may be also conducted for like evaluation purposes to, for instance, evaluate success of a message or a campaign. Communication campaign. And then the results can be further used for specific action purposes, for instance, to support policy making or communication planning. And there are many user groups that can benefit from social media monitoring in the business sector, for instance, marketing specialists, advertisers. And it is often the task of public information officers and especially needed by crisis managers. The monitoring activities can be targeted according to, for instance, stakeholder groups, so who are interacting online, or the type of information, so what is talked about, type of message, what kind of interaction is taking place, or type of social media, where the interaction is taking place. And the focus, on the other hand, specifies the more specific emphasis of monitoring, which could be topics or subtopics or sentiments. In the literature, the process of monitoring is described as consisting of certain steps or phases, as in the research process also. First, in the preparation phase, includes, for instance, the definition of the problem, identification of the issue to be monitored, as well as resources, so budget and personnel for conducting monitoring, timing, geographic focus, and key stakeholder groups whose interests are relevant to know on a particular topic. And the data collection, on the other hand, is preceded by setting search terms and also the keywords, etc. And if it's a more, let's say, research-driven monitoring process, then of course it's also followed by downloading and saving, archiving the data. Then following the data collection is the analysis phase, where specific areas of analysis include statistical analysis and activity metrics, network analysis, and textual analysis. And finally, the findings are reported, and that should be supported by some illustrative visualizations, bar charts, stack clouds, bar charts and maps, etc. The need for decision making based on the results of the monitoring was mentioned in some articles, but not really discussed thoroughly, and seems to be missing from the current literature on the social media monitoring for communication purposes. Then the monitoring methods that were described in those articles cover textual analysis and network analysis. A common approach to a researcher-driven analysis would be to conduct a search in selected databases or social media and then to analyze it following different types of textual analysis. Or next to a researcher-driven, more manual analytical techniques, there would be those involving computer software programs. And besides textual analysis, there's also network analysis, the literature describes network analysis as another approach to describe, for instance, how information spreads and connection between teams, messages, and people. Tools and solutions in this context were discussed only to a very limited extent, including mainly mentions of tools and solutions available, including, for instance, dashboard services which aggregate content from various social media, or then solutions that focus on specific forms of social media, such as blogs or news content, or then focusing on one social media in particular, such as Twitter, or one specific function, such as visualization or localization. And an issue which currently is limiting research in this area is also that many custom-made tools are not discussed at all in the literature. And they are often more advanced also, in that sense. And then some methodological issues. Issues which deal with the research subjects, so those people whose interaction online is actually being monitored, center around issues of privacy and informed consent. So rarely those who are posting online think that their interaction is actually being monitored by researchers and organizations. So that is one issue to kind of consider. And then issues related to data accuracy and objectivity are many. So for instance, these large data sets are prone to outages and losses, and also many social media have only limited archiving capacity. Also, these kind of subtle meanings, attitudes and motivations are hard to study, and there's due to, for instance, lack of contextual information, or malicious use of social media might also twist the findings. Then issues that were related to the tools and solutions have to do, for instance, data scalability issues that arise from the large diversity and speed and volume of social media data, which may challenge their storage and analysis. And in crisis situations, a potential power outage is a big challenge. And then issues that have to do with the sample are related to representativeness of the sample and generalizability of the findings. So for instance, it was mentioned that in Twitter it's really hard to guarantee that any sample would be really comprehensive. And then some trends in this small sample of articles that we had that, although the search was quite broad that we made, it was just few relevant articles we found confirming that this is a young area of research. But nevertheless, there was the number of articles was growing. So it seems that there's anyway growing interest in the topic. And the majority of the articles had empirical data, and the topic was studied in different contexts. Business sector, crisis communication and management, political communication and governmental sector, and health sector, which was quite equally divided between the sectors. The focus of the articles, the majority of them focused on the development of methods and tools. And the second biggest group of articles focused on monitoring in different contexts. Theories and the development of theories and models were discussed in a couple of articles, and methodological discussions were the focus of yet another two articles. And types of social media studied, perhaps surprisingly, YouTube was most studied, followed by Twitter and blogs in these articles. And then just a few concluding points that we thought could be interesting or important for monitoring in crisis situations. So the fact that monitoring may follow distinct phases and a combination of social media should be aimed at, including, for example, Twitter. And for us, textual analysis is useful to understand citizens' points of view. This kind of computer-assisted methods are needed, but seems that this research-driven work is also necessary. So the computers will not yet do the whole work. And there are many tools which, for the moment, are not open enough to check precise procedures in this area. And big samples do not always have good quality, so methodological issues should be kept in mind. Moreover, this kind of monitoring for communication purposes needs really expertise around the clock to make it happen. And these monitoring outcomes are not yet clearly linked to decision-making on communication strategies, which is an area where we would like to further work on. Then finally, to conclude this presentation, in our view, the social media interaction or the participation of organizations in social media interaction should begin with monitoring. And this is really especially relevant for crisis communication, where you need to understand citizens' needs and perceptions, which may change also. But in order to do this, there's also need for a strategy basis to be created before the crisis occurs. So it cannot be started when the crisis is at hand, including, for instance, crisis preparedness, joint communication strategies, and multi-channel approach, using different social media, linked to a dedicated crisis website, but also traditional media. And here the monitoring is, in our work, monitoring is considered as a start activity for online communication by organizations. Here you can find my contact information and the project website of the Cato project, and also website where that has information about all the projects that we have in our department related to crisis communication. Here's the one that I work with, terror emergency communication. Then CRISCOMScore is the one that has most materials already available. It finished already. And then there's PEP, Public Empowerment Policies for Crisis Management, where they also work with social media and try to identify best practices in for a community approach to crisis resilience, including also social media use by citizens. That's it. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ayn. And we are running a bit behind schedule, so let's have a 15-minute coffee break instead of a 20-minute break.